Hello, and welcome back to Amplify with Purpose, the podcast where we explore what it takes to live well and lead with purpose. We discuss everything from nuanced business strategies to transformative leadership and personal development. Every episode is filled with practical strategies that help you live your best life. My mission is to help you live with purpose and amplify your impact. So, whether you're looking for an amplifying in your business to enrich your personal experiences, or just a little bit of inspiration, you're in the right place. Today, like every other episode, I have the absolute pleasure of introducing someone who is an absolute phenomenal person in their field of expertise. Today is no different, and I'd like to invite and welcome Pastor Nikki van der Westhuizen III. That's like very official, I might say. It's kind of like speaking to the Queen. Pastor Nikki is the Chief Operating Officer of NBCFC, which is a non-denominational, multicultural, and I want to say almost mega church in Boksburg, South Africa. And I say almost because I did the numbers and apparently you've got to have 2,000 people every week in the building. They've got about 1,000, 1,500, 1,800 at a go, and they've got more than 7,000 followers and people on their books. So I want to go mega church in the current sense, but be that as it may, Pastor Nikki's family impact has is huge across history, from his grandfather who pioneered to his dad who pioneered, and himself who's now pioneering in South Africa in NBCFC, and they have a global reach. And today we are going to talk about something that I'm pretty passionate about, and that's culture, because culture eats strategy for breakfast. Pastor Nikki, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here, Odette. It's a great honor and privilege to be on this platform. And I'm super excited about this podcast and just this topic. I love this topic. This is really one of the things I love talking about. Just love speaking to people about this. And it's actually like a new thing in me that's kind of exciting. I never knew I would be excited about this kind of stuff. So yeah, thank you for having me here today. It's a great, great privilege.
Beautiful. So, Chief Operating Officer. That's a pretty big title. And might I add, you're a very young man. And for those of you who are wondering, yes, he is a very young man. He doesn't just look good. He is actually quite young, but he's filled the role really, really well. So Pastor Nikki, what inspired you to become the COO? Because that's like a huge thing. And I'm not sure that kids wake up going, I want to be a COO.
Yeah, no, it was definitely not like that. I never dreamt of being, first of all, in ministry. I wanted to be in business. And then the Lord called me into ministry directly after school. So I've been in full-time ministry in the church world for, I think it's maybe 8 years now, maybe 8 or 9 years since I've been in the full-time aspect. Started as a youth leader. And I always make this joke, like I had a Gideon's revival, which is we went from 100 to 40, you know, we declined in our attendance. We did not grow. So God did a lot of things in me, in our youth ministry. And then at the end of it, we grew it, gave it over, and then started in the creative team. I don't know why, but I think it's because I was the youngest staff member. So everybody that was older than me said, hey, you can run the creative team because you're young. So I took on that role. And we ran the creative team for a couple of years. And then after that, I said to my dad, I think I have the capacity to run more than just the creative team. And then, yeah, I was kind of jumping into the deep end. But that's how I've learned my whole life, is jump into the deep end. So with the youth, I was underqualified, inexperienced, but jumped into the deep end and learned a lot of things I don't think I would have learned if I never did it. And the same with the creative aspect of church. And now the same thing with operations. I didn't know it was such a big task when I first nominated and said, I'll do it. And then I realized, wow, okay, this is actually a lot more responsibility than I thought. And yeah, so that's what inspired me. There was also somebody else from another church, an actual mega church. Thank you for giving us a compliment. But I would say we're not there yet. But this pastor from this mega church, he runs it and he's been running it for a lot of years as the COO. And I've never seen somebody so great at systems, implementation, strategy, running a organization that, like you say, doesn't make money or doesn't, it's not in it for profit. It's actually in it for changing lives. So I was very inspired by his life. And he also coached me for a whole year. He coached me every single month. I sat down with him because of my dad's relationship with him. He allowed me to sit with him for a whole year. And he taught me everything behind the scenes of how to run a church. So I'm very grateful for that. So I hope, yeah, I hope that answers the question of what inspired me. There's a lot of people, a lot of things, but I think I also inspired myself, which I think that was a big mistake. In the beginning, I was like, why would I even raise my hand for this job? But now I understand why God has put me here, and I'm very grateful to be in this position. Yeah.
So those of you who've been following the show for a while know we talk about leadership quite often, and one of the important points that come up every single time we talk about leadership is the fact that those who are in leadership choose to take responsibility. And it doesn't mean that we know how to do it. It doesn't mean that we are going to do it right the first time. We're happy to give it a go. And that's exactly what's happened here. You've got an attitude of, well, I don't know necessarily how to do this, but I'm quite happy to give it a go. And I think that's amazing. And it definitely shows in the culture that you've created within your team and the broader team. You mentioned a couple of times that you are very young, and I've mentioned it because you are very young. I won't tell you how old I am, but Pastor Nicky is possibly a decade younger than me. He's about my brother's age. So he's very young, and he's successfully managed to lead a team and instill and establish a culture that's a positive culture that works towards excellence and exceptional experiences. So Pastor Nicky, how has your age influenced your leadership style?
So that's a great question. And I do get that a lot with the age thing. But I actually asked that question to on a podcast with Craig Rochelle. I sent my question in. He's another pastor, and I didn't think he was going to answer. I just said, I was 21 at the time, and I was leading, I think, other teams in the church as well. And I just said, how am I going to overcome the age thing? And it was actually amazing that he decided to answer that question on his podcast. And he said these four things on the podcast that really helped me. He said, number one, someone else believed that you were capable for that role. So someone else believed in you, which was my dad at the time. Number two, God believed you were ready for the role. That's why you're in that role. Number three, the people you are leading are thinking about themselves more than you think. So I was so concerned about what people were thinking about me, not realizing nobody was thinking about me at all. They're actually very concerned about themselves at the end of the day. And then the last one, number four, was some people may discredit you for your age, and it's just something you have to deal with. So that was kind of like the harsh truth behind it, is that there are people that are not going to want to follow you because of your age. And then he made a very valid point on saying that which age is the right age to lead. And that's a very valid point. He's like, when he was 20, he thought it was going to be 30. And then when he was 30, he thought it was 40. When he was 40, he thought it's 50. So he says there was never a right time to take on a leadership role. So for you to wait to become the right age doesn't help. Now, the Bible does speak about not empowering young believers in leadership roles, which I do agree with that. But it doesn't say not empowering young people. You know, Jesus chose very young disciples, young apostles to follow him. And Paul speaks to Timothy and says, don't let anybody despise your youth. Use that youth, you know, use that fire. So that's really, I think, the age. I don't know if it has influenced a lot, but I've had to separate myself from the age and just say, I'm in the role, in the position. In the Bible, kings were very young. They weren't always as old as today, where presidents are 70, 75. In the Bible, they were like 30 or 40 leading. I think there was one king that was 16 or 13 and leading a whole nation. So I do believe that leadership is a spirit that can come upon you, that God can empower you with, and that you can lead at any age. And I think as well, my age might have been a bit of a benefit at this time, because I've had the ability to kind of take some of the older people onto a journey of the new. And I've had the ability of taking the new younger people on a journey to say, let's respect the old, let's respect their wisdom, let's learn from them. So kind of feel like a bridge between two generations. I think it's actually helped me a lot more than what it has discredited me. Yeah.
That's amazing and such a perfect segue, because when you're dealing with such a large group of individuals, there's some people who are pretty young and still bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and there are equally people who have seen a lot and done many, many things. And I think one of the biggest challenges for most organizations, whether you're for-profits or not, is bringing along a wide range of ages and maturity levels so that everyone is working towards a cohesive goal and everyone works together well. Because quite often, I mean, here in Australia, often the younger people will talk about the older people as oldies.
Okay.
Say about it what you like. There's two perspectives of that. The one is that they're quite friendly with them because you're an oldie, so we're mates. But there is also the perspective of, but these people have seen things and they have so much to impart and share. And they feel like the younger people don't listen, and the younger people feel like, oh, look, you're just too old. You just don't know. You don't even know the Instagram, never mind on the internet. So how did you manage to be that bridge and build the connection between the groups so that they work cohesively together?
Well, I did say to you in the beginning I was going to be honest. So I'll be honest in the fact that I think I messed up a lot in the beginning when I was a younger person on the team. I also discredited the old people and, well, oldies. And just like anybody that was over, you know, 35 was old in my age, in my eyes. at that time. But I would say that I had to really realize the value of the older generation and not see it as a throwaway. You know, you've had your time, you never used the time correctly, move on. You know, I had to change my mind to say, what is the value that this person can still bring to the table and understand their perspective? I think that's a big part of my leadership style, is understanding people's perspectives and what they are saying, why they are saying it, and not just take it as, you know, through my perspective, but really trying to put myself in their shoes. You know, why is this person getting to this conclusion? I've had to really learn that the hard way. I've definitely lost some relationships because of how I used to operate, in terms of not caring about people that were maybe older, that didn't see my perspective. But now I feel like I'm in a better place of understanding that every person can add value to the team. I love what this one church says, one pastor says, that everybody is a 10 at something, and it's just our job to discover it. So we started doing that a lot more, to find out, what are you a 10 at, and ignoring kind of, what are you a zero at? Because sometimes leaders just want to zone in on the zero and improve that weakness. But really, what is the strength of the person? And then I think John Maxwell, he also spoke about diversity being such a big strength in an organization. Diversity in backgrounds, culture, race, age, and really celebrating that. Because what's the point of having only white young men in the company? What's the point of that? Like, we will all think the same way. So we got to get some other races, backgrounds, cultures, ages, genders in the mix, so that we can understand everybody's perspective and then make the best decision for the organization based on that. So I do think that that's what's helped me a lot, is understanding why are they saying what they are saying. And like you said, the Australians, they've been here for a while, they've been through storms, they've been through things. So let's rather use that value instead of just, you know, throwing it away, saying, oh, whatever, you're old, don't even come into the meeting. So yeah, that's definitely a mistake I've made, but learn from it and trying to definitely improve on that every single day.
So you mentioned something that I didn't know you were going to use that word, but it's something that comes up often here, and it's something that I'm very particular and passionate about, and that care about the people. So my motto is that we need to first connect with the heart before we can influence the mind and then empower the hands. And whether it's leadership or culture, I feel like it always starts with empathy. It always starts with understanding. And understanding doesn't mean that they're right. It doesn't mean that they have the only way, because as you've rightfully mentioned, there are multiple perspectives. And if you look at a rock from the left, you'll see one side. And if you look at a rock from the right, you'll see a different side. It's the same rock, but it's different perspectives. And if we are able to shift and move across perspectives, we are able to lead people better and bring them along the journey. And I think it's amazing that you've done that. You've chosen to connect with people, to understand them. Yes, you made mistakes, and we've all made mistakes. And I appreciate that you are vulnerable enough with us today to recognize and acknowledge that you've made mistakes, because we all have. And it's easy to look at successful leaders and say, oh, they're just so awesome. They're just so amazing. I wish I could ever do that. But the reality is, to get to the awesome, you've had to go through the mud and make a couple of mistakes. And the truth we've all done that. So in terms of empowering your team, what strategy do you use to empower your team members and encourage professional growth?
So to empower team members, I think there's just one thread that this conversation is going to go to. The foundation of it is that you got to let go of certain tasks, of authority, of decisions, and allow people to make them. And allow people to fail and be a coach alongside them instead of a person that's just hammering them for making wrong decisions. Again, I was in that same boat a couple of years ago, and I think I've been improving in this area to say, all right, let's let this person lead. Let's see how they do. And let's empower them with this moment, even on stage. I mean, I don't know if it can relate to people in business, but when we have to ask someone to do, you know, an offering or to receive or to do the altar call, which is to bring souls into the kingdom, to do a welcome segment communion on our online church, you know, it's like it's a daunting task to some people. But and my dad can do it if he wanted to. He can do it every single time on the stage. I can do it every single time on the stage. It's no problem. We can do it. But we have made a decision. We're going to empower people. So that's just one of the strategies. It's like saying, okay, what areas don't we have to do as the top leaders that we don't, that we feel is not that's something that we have to do? We can let other people do this, even though we would enjoy doing it. I mean, we would enjoy receiving that offering, doing communion, doing the call for the lost. You know, it's a great passion of ours. But let's trust somebody else. Let's see how they do. And actually, weekly, we give them feedback. So I'll give that as a practical example. Like every single week, we've got a, what we call a stage leads feedback meeting. And in that meeting, you get told what you did wrong on the stage, what you can work on, your presentation. Everything gets spoken about in that meeting with myself or my dad, which is the senior pastor of the church. And that has been improving people on the stage, their stage personality, their confidence, their communication. So I think a lot of leaders like to give people things they don't want to do and then never check up on it again. And that's not empowering people. That's what we call dumping tasks on people. You just let it go. Okay, I don't care what you do with that thing. But if you as a leader can take something that's precious to you and empower someone else that responsibility, you are then going to grow. You're going to be challenged. You're going to have to confront things you didn't want to confront. So you have to allow yourself to let go of certain things that you actually want to do and allow someone else to do. And most of the time, 9 out of 10 times, I have found in at least in church context that the more people I've empowered, they actually did better than what I did. So they actually do it better. They grow it more. They focus. They discover their purpose. And I feel a lot more fulfilled in that role than trying to do everything all the time as the leader. So yeah, I hope that answers the question on how you can empower your team members a lot more. It's just like let go a lot. I think Sam Chand has a illustration where he does this with his hands, and he says leaders have to do this with the task. They have to let go. They have to expand their reach and let the influence just be increased a lot more in their space. So yeah,
that's such a powerful concept. if you think about giving your most valued task to one of your team members, it means that you have to trust them.
Yeah, that's right.
And the truth is that I said it in a podcast earlier this week, nobody that I've met yet on this earth wakes up and goes, I am going to do the worst job today. I am going to mess up everything I can. I just want to be a horrible individual. Nobody does that. So when we acknowledge people and we give them an opportunity to do something that they know we love to do, then it's like you're saying, I trust you. I'm willing for you to do this thing because I believe you can do it. That means that person is no longer a number. They are part of something bigger. And that's what we long for. We long for being part of something bigger. We want to belong. We want to impact.
That's right.
And when we allow people to impact, they grow, right? Yeah. When I first started doing coaching, my senior coach said to me, when you're in the presence of authenticity, you yourself become bigger because they don't have to break you down and they don't have to be anything. They just are.
Yeah.
And it's the same as when we trust people, they grow. You learn about yourself. Absolutely. You learn how to keep quiet and bite your tongue because you thought that you would do it differently, but you've now given them the opportunity to do it their way. But you also give them an opportunity to own it, to take responsibility and to grow within themselves. And I find that when we do that with people, it's like they suddenly sit up straighter and they lift their chin up higher. And now they walk around with confidence, which they didn't have before. And all they needed was for you to say, actually, I trust you with this thing. And that is super powerful. I think one of your Kings in the Marketplace sessions, and you spoke about the training you do with your team, which I absolutely loved, where you did stuff wrong on purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you share with us, what is that training and why do you do it? I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, so I think I do a few things that the team actually hates, but I love it. So maybe, I don't know, that's just, maybe I need to work on that a bit more. But yeah, so every single week we got a meeting called Feed Forward. And I stole that from another church that does it with their staff because they said, we don't like to say the word feedback, like past, we're feeding forward, you know, to move the company forward. And then this idea, I don't know where I got it. Maybe it was my own idea. I don't know. But we call it a Sunday simulation. And I would tell the staff like a day before, maybe 12 hours before, listen, tomorrow morning when you get to the office, we are doing Sunday simulation. I'm simulating the first 15 minutes of our or before the service starts, which for us as a church is the most crucial time. Because first time guests arrive, second time guests arrive, the most people arrive in that time. So really, if you think in business context, it's really the time to connect with your customers, make sure that they are okay, and get them to take a next step. So I told the team, we're doing Sunday simulation, and then I would choose maybe three people that will be our first and second time guests for the day. And then I would choose people to sabotage the whole setting. So they would have to come in and walk around with a dirty mop in our foyer. And another person is running. Another person is shouting. There's spelling errors on our screens. Chairs are wrong. Air cons are not on. Like just everything that I can think of, we make it go wrong. And I don't say anything to them. All I'm waiting for them is to either fix it or for them to make note of it and tell me afterwards that they saw the problem. This is what they did with that problem. So I love it. We're going to have another one coming up soon. And I think it's the best thing. I think I actually got it from McDonald's. That's right. On that movie Founder. They before they started McDonald's, they drew the whole kitchen on a tennis court with chalk. And they had to practice with the staff team. Like, how are we going to get burgers out in 30 seconds or under a minute? I think McDonald's has to do that again, just to refresh the training in South Africa. But it was a great concept, you know, in Australia as well. But it was a great concept to see, okay, how are things going to run before we actually launch it? And I think that business people might have to do that a lot more. Like the owner, have you been in the place where the customer is? You know, have you put yourself in their shoes and saying, okay, when that first time customer is walking through my doors, what are they seeing, smelling, experiencing, hearing? So we are big on those type of things. We call it the epic church experience. We want to create an epic experience every Sunday for people when they walk through our doors. It mustn't be normal, because when I say church, people think church is boring. You know, church is just traditional. It's one guy in the front that's just going to speak for an hour and the rest of us must just listen. The songs are boring. You know, so we are very intentional as MBCUC to make sure that we are giving you the best experience. We call it an epic experience. And we're not there yet. It's only been about 2 years of us trying to get this thing in. And I can see it now, like on a Sunday morning when you come to church, I can almost guarantee, I'll say 90% you will have a great experience here at MBCOC. I would love for us to get that number higher. We are still working on it. That's why we're doing things like Sunday simulation, feed forward. We call it epic fails. Then I take pictures on Sunday of things that go wrong. And we show that on a big TV to all the staff on a Tuesday morning saying, what happened over here? Why is that out of line? And then we want Thursday, we want feedback. Have you fixed it? Is it ready for Sunday? So there's a lot of things we try to do practically to make sure that the Sunday experience is not just boring, normal. We want that guy that goes to the best restaurant, the best club, the best golf club. You know, their kids go to the best private schools and then they come to church and we just think, oh, well, doesn't matter what they get. No, it's the house of God. It has to be the best. You know, it has to be the most excellent place on all the earth, has to be the house of God. And actually, people from another religion like Islam, if I can mention that, they are great at this, showing their God. With the type of buildings they build. When we were in Abu Dhabi, we saw the Grand Mosque. I think it cost over $3 or $4 billion to build this Grand Mosque. There's like a whole mall underneath the thing with Starbucks and shops and escalators, elevators. And when you go to the mosque, there's Swarovski chandeliers. There's carpets that took, they took 400 women to put the carpet together. A hand-woven carpet from Morocco. So they went all out, and then you find churches and maybe some Christian business owners that just don't care about what their place looks like, smells like, feels like. And that's maybe why things are not working out in many places, because we don't care as the business owner. So I made a decision. I'm going to care about it. I'm going to make a big deal about it. You know, to a staff member, it might seem like you're being too much. You know, Pastor Nicky, it's too much. Who cares if the toilet paper looked like that? I care. God cares about it. The person that's going to go to that toilet cares about it. And let's give them the best experience wherever they are here at MBCFC.
That is beautiful. That's my language. I love to hear that we go and test what our customers go through. So yes. No, a churchgoer is not a customer, but yes, they are a customer. So sure. Use whatever you want in terms of word, church attendant, congregation member, family member, customer. Yes. It's about the experience. We all have experiences. And I fully agree with you. When it comes to church, we have to up our game. We can't be the worst experience. And equally for Christian businesses, I feel personally that Christian businesses need to be better.
Yeah.
Really, we're supposed to be better than anyone else. And quite often we're not, which is shocking. Exactly. However, what Pastor Nicky has shared is a universal principle that if you apply it in your business, it's going to change your profitability forever.
100%. Yes.
Because the reality is, without customers, you do not have a business. That's the truth.
Yep.
We have a global environment. And thanks to the global environment, your customer can buy what you've got from anywhere else in the world. The fact that they come to you means they chose you intentionally. Now, that's there are commodities like cement, for example, that people buy on price. Yet, they would still not buy the product if that cement product has a reputation for not being able to withstand the pressure, or it flakes or breaks, or there's issues with it. Then people won't buy the product, even if it is the cheapest. But the reality is, when we choose to do something, we have to anticipate what our customers are going to go through. With my clients, do walk in your customer shoes. I literally make them walk in their customer shoes. And I wish that the businesses listening today would pay attention to what Pastor Nikki said, because it's universally true. What do they hear? What do they see? What do they smell? What information gets thrown to them? All of those things create an emotional experience. So never mind the fact that I've seen the toilet paper, I walk into the bathroom and it stinks. Now I associate that smell with the experience, rightfully or wrongfully. It doesn't matter. That's the way it is. Now, every time I think about my experience, I remember how smelly it was, instead of remembering how welcome I was, the new people that I met, the great family members that I've gotten to engage with, my awesome experience with my kids.
Yeah.
And that's true for any business. What do your customers experience when they come in? How do you handle these epic fails? Do you prepare your team for epic fails? We have in our team, we talk about resting grumpy face, which is, you know, that face that we all have.
Yes.
But it's something that actually has such a big impact on experience. When you meet someone for the first time and they do that.
Yeah.
Your tone of voice changes. The person feels like, I shouldn't be here. The minute you smile, your tone of voice changes. Your eyes light up. People feel like, oh, okay.
That's right.
So those are all things that we need to talk about.
Yeah.
But what Pastor Nikki has said is they've actually practiced it and they continue to practice it. And I love what you just said. You said it.
Sorry, Odette, I think I lost you on the audio.
Are we back?
There we go. We're back. We're back.
Where did you lose me? Ritz Carlton?
I think you were still speaking about the epic fails, practicing it, all those kind of things.
Yes. So the Ritz-Carlton does exactly that. They train their teams on everything that could possibly go wrong and how to handle it and what to do when it goes wrong. They empower their teams, so they'll give their teams budgets. And there's many organizations that do it. I know Discovery used to do it in South Africa. They give their teams a discretionary allowance for when things go wrong. How do we make it right without you having to go and ask your boss, is it okay if I go make right, because we actually made a mess here. But the point is that if you as an owner don't care about your experience, about your culture, about your team's not going to care, and the experience will show.
That's right. And the Ritz-Carlton actually I think we also learned from them a little bit. I think they give their staff like a $2,000 allowance or whatever for if things go wrong, they can make a decision and up to $2,000 to change it, to fix it. It's amazing. Like imagine empowering your team with financial decisions. You know, I don't think a lot of people can do that. And that's something to work towards. But that's really showing that we trust you as a staff member, you know, to do that.
Absolutely. So you've mentioned you share responsibility with your teams, but how do you handle the moments where I did stub up and I didn't do what I was supposed to do, or I did make a mistake and I failed epically on my own with your guidance? I still managed to cook it.
Yeah. So first of all, I think the leader has to take that responsibility in saying, okay, did I communicate everything good enough so that this person can understand what I wanted? And John Maxwell has a great saying, just because you said it doesn't mean they heard it, doesn't mean they understood it. So a lot of people just write an email and then expect 10 out of 10 excellence. And it's really, the reality is not going to happen. You got to email them, send them a text, phone them, meet with them, everything you can as a leader to make sure that what you've asked for actually is going to get done. And then the most important part is when something does go wrong, the team has to know that it went wrong. I think a lot of people shy away from confrontation, and it's good to confront the fact, the reality. Okay, guys, we failed on Sunday in terms of there was a terrible smell, or somebody complains, you know, an old person parked way too far, whatever the case might be. But we failed on Sunday, and this is what we failed at. Be very specific. Be very clear in what they failed at. Don't just be generic and be like, oh, you know, it was everyone's thing. No, this thing failed. And we got to look at that thing, zone in on that thing, and then help the person to say, that's not how you speak to a first-time guest. This is how I want you to speak to a first-time guest. So, for example, I went on one of the Sunday mornings and asked one of our, we call them dream teamers, but in terms of just terms for everybody, volunteer. And I went to her and I asked her, okay, so I'm a first-time guest today. What happens with me? And she said something along the lines where it was not right, where I was like, no way, that's not what we tell our first-time guests. And I spoke to her on the spot. And then I spoke to the leader, I think the day after or 2 days after, about why this person didn't know the right language, because it's ultimately up to the leader to make sure that they speak the right language, they use the right words, and they know why they are doing what they are doing. So if something goes wrong, make sure it gets confronted in a good way. You don't have to be that boss that hones in on people, shouts at them, and just micromanages. You don't have to be that person. You can be the person that takes a photo of it and addresses it the day after. Make sure that it just gets addressed, confronted, and then you want to see the change of behavior. So you want to help the person understand why. A lot of people need to know why they're going to do what they do, not just what they have to do. So explain to them why we don't want you to speak to a first-time guest like that, and not just say what you want them to say. I think a lot of companies actually get that wrong. You know, there's a lot of times you speak to someone on the phone or email, and you can feel this person they're just doing the job. They don't care about me. They don't care about my experience. And it frustrates me a lot of times, especially when you have seen the best of the best companies, hotels, resorts, you've seen the best airlines, and then you fly a terrible airline and you just feel like leaving. You don't want to be there. You would rather fly with that other airline, even if it's more money. And I think that's what a lot of business people have to understand, why it's important that customer can leave and will take their money to your competitor, because you could not spend the time with your staff to say, all right, guys, this is what I don't want. This is what I want. Let's work on it and keep them accountable week after week. Not once a year. It's got to be weekly. Keeping people accountable daily. Accountability is important, I think, in any organization.
It's like you've been in the background of this podcast for a very, very long time. She mentioned a couple of things which are foundational to who we are, what we do, and what we talk about all the time. And the first would probably be clarity, because without clarity, we make mistakes. We assume we just hit it wrong because we just didn't bother to be clear about what's good and what's not. The second thing is clarity leads to the ability to hold somebody accountable. And I want to point out that you cannot hold someone accountable if you weren't clear to start off with. If you just wanted someone to have a conversation with a new person and you weren't clear about what the conversation looks like, what the language we use, what it's the tone is, and they have resting grumpy face and then have a negative tone, that's on you. And the third thing is consistency. Consistency in delivery of message, consistency of the things we need to do, and consistent training and applying it consistently.
Yeah.
I love what you mentioned, and I'd like to find out where it comes from, because the general, or the, I want to say old school way of leading is kind of, let's sandwich feedback. Hey, your data, great. You messed up. But hey, your data, great. You didn't sandwich. Where does that come from? and sort of what inspired it?
I do think that a lot of people just don't want to make the person feel bad. But you actually making them more confused than anything else, because they thinking they're doing a great job, but actually now you said that they didn't, but then you said they did do a great job. So it's just like very confusing. So we like to go with a method of preparing people for an uncomfortable or awkward conversation. We're going to tell you, listen, we're going to have an uncomfortable conversation. We have to have it. And then immediately when they walk into the office, they know and they've prepared themselves for the worst. I think that's also important, is preparing. The person has to be prepared. Like if you're going to fire someone or give them a warning, please don't make jokes with them in the beginning of that meeting. I think that's just not going to go down well, joking with them and then telling them, oh, by the way, we have to let you go. You know, that's not going to work. So I do think it's best for leaders to confront the problem when it's only about the problem. Like speak to the person, confront the problem, and then let it go. Let the person leave the office thinking about what they did. And then when you praise people and you celebrate people, don't mix confrontation and issues with the celebration. Now when we're going to have a party, let's have a party. Let's enjoy it. Let's not talk about work and things we've done wrong. Let's celebrate our team. Let's celebrate the wins. But when it comes to those losses, the fails, we're going to address that failure and really speak about it and make sure that the person understands and they are clear. Like you said, it's clear what they did wrong and how to fix it.
Here's how I do it. For me, it's our team is expected to self-correct, and there are specific values and specific behaviors which we've clarified. You know, in a practical way, we believe in value X, and this is how we demonstrate it. And the team generally holds each other accountable because it was set up front. We have team days where we talk about these are the values, these are the behaviors. This is how we hold each other accountable. Yeah. And when there is consistent team correction, but the behavior doesn't change, I would step in and say, hey, we need to have a chat with Auntie Odette. Yeah. That's code for, dude, you're in trouble. Like there's something you're supposed to do. You didn't do it. We've tried to help you, right?
Yeah.
We now need to have a serious conversation. Generally, we don't get to that because the team self-corrects and the team has That's conversations good. With each other, because nobody actually wants to have a chat with Auntie Odette. Let's be honest. And I love what you said. You don't just highlight what went wrong. You highlight how to fix it. And that's all part of creating a culture of empowerment. There's no point in telling someone that they didn't speak to the new person correctly if you are not planning on telling them how to fix it. Because the next question is, okay, I didn't do that right. What was I supposed to do? And if you can't answer that, then you're going to have this conversation again. But unfortunately, people get wounded in the process, whether it's at church or in a business. You wound the people that actually want to be there. They're showing up. The fact that they're having the conversation means they're trying to do this job that you've given them.
You're right.
You've not adequately equipped them.
Yep.
So Pastor Nikki, what are some of your favorite tips or most practical tips that you would give to leaders who are looking to empower their teams effectively in a really pragmatic way?
Yeah, so I would say there's three things, because when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, okay, empowering people practically, how does that look? Number one for me is you have to identify the right person to empower. It does not help you identify the person that's a 0 out of 10 in that area and try to make them a 10. At best, you could make them a 2, but you got to find the person that you think is a 8 or 9 or 10 out of 10 at, for example, in this context, connecting with people, and then empower that person to go connect to them. So we're busy rectifying a lot of those positions, even in our church. I think it's constant, because there might be some people that you thought were good at that, and then you empower them and you realize they are not good at that. But now it's not leaving it. It's saying, okay, let's have the tough conversation. Let's find out where they're good, move them into that position, and move the right person into the place where I need them for this role. So number one, identify the right people so that you can develop them, train them, and not waste your time. And then number two is to delegate authority, not just tasks. I think that's a lot of business owners' problem, especially in South Africa. They love to delegate to people to do things, but they're the only one that can say yes and no in the organization. They're the only one that can really speak to the value, to the vision of the company, but everybody else is just these task-focused people, robots, just doing a job. So number two is actually delegate authorities. More people in your company should be able to say yes and no to things than you. There should be an empowerment of authority. And then number three is the very daunting word, the horrifying word, which we call trust. Trust is a big one. When you've empowered someone, when you've identified someone, trust them. They are going to make mistakes. They are going to mess up. They are going to fail miserably in the beginning. But if you can show them you trust them and you're willing to overlook some of those failures to get them to a better place, you will find that the team becomes more loyal to you. People actually want to be around you. People want to receive from you. They want to do this thing that you've asked them for because they feel the leader trusts them. And I think a lot of people don't allow their team to fail, mess up, and then feel you weren't taken out by the boss because you failed one time. Like, just allow them to fail, speak to them, trust them, and tell them, I trust you. Greg Rochelle is a great way of putting it, where he says that trust is not, I think he says, let me just get it before I mess it up. Trust is given, not earned. Distrust is earned. And I like that. Distrust is what's earned. It's not the trust that is earned. I give you my trust. I give the team my trust. But they can earn distrust through things they maybe did wrong continuously. But I'm not going to tell you, hey, you have to earn my trust. I'm giving it to you from the beginning. So I hope that helps, those three tips for the leaders.
Those are excellent tips, empowering the right people, delegating authority. On delegating authority, I want to point out that when you do that, your decision-making process speeds up dramatically. Your customer experience gets so much better because people are empowered to make decisions.
Yeah.
It also makes your process for decision-making a lot cheaper. My husband always talks about being a hen without teeth, and it refers to having the position of authority but not being able to enforce the authority. Yeah. Because authority actually means nothing without enforcement. It's like the rules of the road. In South Africa, if you have a Coke and a two-piece KFC, we can negotiate whether or not I was speeding. In Australia, however, there is no negotiation. There is the speed, and there is what you were doing. And if what you were doing exceeded the speed, there is a problem. It's important that we understand that in the context of business. And we understand that if we want to have really profitable businesses that deliver exceptional experiences, it requires us to make decisions quickly, make good decisions, so that our clients and our customers experience memorable experiences. And of course, trust. I love that. I've never actually thought about the fact that trust is given, not earned, because I grew up in a time where trust was earned. Not give it, which I think is beautiful. Right. It's a great perspective on things.
Well, Dr. Sam Tand actually says that your organization moves at the speed of trust.
Yes.
So you can only grow quick and move quick if there's trust in the employees, trust in the executive team. But if there's no trust, things are going to slow down because everyone is going to question everyone. And with a team like that, you can't move. So I would say that's the number one thing for business people, is like, make sure your team gets to a place of trusting each other. And again, back to Greg Rochelle, he says the best way to trust someone is very simple. You have to trust them. And that's exactly it. You have to allow yourself to trust someone and not have the mentality of you have to earn my trust. But a lot of times business owners, they want to hold back. They want to do it. The do-it-myself method. If you want to do something right, do it yourself. That's what a lot of people believe. But I do agree. Yeah, if you want to do it right, you can do it yourself. But you can't grow like that. You can't multiply. I don't think you can make more money like that. Imagine if Jeff Bezos was the delivery guy for Amazon. Imagine he was trying to be the guy that put the things in boxes. It won't work. So he had to learn, I got to delegate, I got to empower, got a great product, but how can I make it better? And he empowered the right people. And today he's a multi-billionaire because of it. So there's a lot of opportunity, money, profit in empowering people rather than holding back, trying to do everything yourself.
That's a very good point. Empowering your team leads to profitability. Like, yes. if there was a reason for you to empower your team, profitability should be right there. Never mind the fact that they feel good yes. about themselves. Pastor Nikki, what are some of the emerging trends in leadership and team empowerment that you believe that leaders should be aware of and adapt for?
That's a very good question. I think the future of leadership is going to look a lot younger as well, a lot more in this area of empowering. So I do think that business people and CEOs that don't learn to let go of authority, that don't identify the right people, develop people, their businesses will reach a cap. It will reach a lid. And I'll say this as a spiritual person, no matter how much they pray, fast, nothing's going to help, because you're not trusting the right people. You're not empowering the right people. So the new trend of leadership, especially with my generation, and I think the generation to come, is that they're not looking for a tyrant. They're not looking for a dictator. They're looking for leaders that will understand them, have empathy with them, and show them exactly where they want them to go, develop them. What I'm seeing with young people, especially in our churches, they want someone to notice them, and they want an opportunity. But churches are not giving them opportunity. The business world doesn't want to. I mean, it's so funny. The joke is always, you know, after you've studied and you need to go work somewhere, they say you need 5 years experience. You're like,
yes.
I just finished studying, so how is that going to work? So it's the same with church world. We are not willing to put a young person on stage because they haven't done it before. Well, somewhere they're going to have to start. And if they have to mess up in our service, that's fine. But 10 years down the line, this might be a very powerful preacher, speaker, leader, pillar in our church. And we can all laugh at the first time he did it 10 years from now, but let's start somewhere. So I do think that that's the trend, is empowering people, letting go of authority, responsibilities, and allowing your team to mess up, fail, and then get back up and do it better the next time. So that's for me where I see leadership going in the future, Odette.
I want to point out two specific authors. So if you're a spiritual person, John Brevere talks about empowering people. And let's go to Alex Hormozi. So Alex Hormozi says that you have to be a fool, willing to be a fool before you succeed. And John Brevere in his books, X, talks about making mistakes at a small scale and the impact, versus making mistakes on a big scale and the impact. So when you are a small church and you mess up, there are 10, 20, 50 people impacted and the ripple of that. When you're a mega church and a mega organization and you mess up, the impacts are hundreds of thousands of people, because those 10 people know 150 people know 150 people.
That's right.
And before you know it, due to compound, the impact is huge. And Alex Hormozi talks about the fact that you have to be scrappy. You have to be able to say, well, I need to figure this out. I need to look like a fool. And if you are willing to look like a fool consistently, at some point you will be the expert.
Exactly.
But the expert didn't wake up the expert.
That's good. I like that.
So for those of you wondering if this is just spiritual or just business, it's a little bit of both. Pastor Nikki, this has been a really insightful conversation. I so enjoyed talking to you. What would be your one or two key themes or messages that you would like to leave our audience with today?
Yeah, so I think the last thing I would like to say to people, to business people, leaders, is be what you want to see in your organization. So if you want more passion, be passionate. You want more energy, be more energetic. Just become the person that you want to attract. John Maxwell says, we don't attract what we want, we attract who we are. So make sure that you become the person you want to see. Don't just complain. And I'll put it in the church context again. Pastors complaining. My people are not on fire. My people are not giving enough. My people are not serving. And the question is, well, how are you doing? First of all, as the senior leader of this place. And same for business people. You know, don't have this thing of my staff don't want to. well, which side are you on? Which side are they on? Are you guys on the same team? So be the person you want to see first, and then people will follow that.
Beautiful. There you have it. Be the person you want to see, your team will follow that. It's been absolutely amazing having you on the show, Pastor Nikki. For those of you who have watched us on live, thank you very much for joining us. For those of you who join us later, you are welcome to hashtag replay in the comments. If you have any questions, as always, pop them in the comments. We will answer them in the comment section. If you have questions and they're big enough, perhaps we have Pastor Nikki back to have another conversation, but that's entirely up to you. Thank you for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next time. Remember to like and share. As always, keep increasing your impact.